burned cottage, and was past hearing anything. "I'll steal a sweet kiss with a point of my blade, hey-ho, hey-ho!" She thought she heard a wood-harp, too, beneath the soft rush of the river.
"Do you hear?"
Hot Pie asked in a hoarse whisper, as he hugged an armful of cabbages.
"Someone's coming!"
"Go wait, Gendry," Arya told him. "Just shake him by the shoulder. Don't make a lot of noise." Gendry was easy to wake, unlike Hot Pie, who needed to be kicked and shouted at. "I'll make her my love, and we'll rest in the shade. Hey-ho! Hey-ho!" The song swelled louder with every word. Hot Pie opened his arms. The cabbages fell to the ground with soft thumps.
"We have to hide."
"Where?" The burned cottage and its overgrown garden stood hard beside the banks of the Trident. There were a few willows growing along the river's edge and reed beds in the muddy shallows beyond, but most of the ground hereabouts was painfully open. "I knew we should never have left the woods," she thought. They'd been so hungry, though, and the garden had been too much a temptation. The bread and cheese they had stolen from Harrenhal had given out 6 days ago, back in the thick of the woods. "Take Gendry and the horses behind the cottage," she decided. There was part of one wall still standing, big enough, maybe, to conceal two boys and three horses. If the horses don't whinny, and that singer doesn't come poking around the garden.
"What about you?"
"I'll hide by the tree. He's probably alone. If he bothers me, I'll kill him.
Go!"
Hot Pie went, and Arya dropped her carrots and drew the stolen sword from over her shoulder. She had strapped the sheath across her back. The longsword was made for a man grown, and it bumped against the ground when she wore it on her hip. "It's too heavy, besides," she thought, missing needle the way she did every time she took this clumsy thing in her hand. But it was a sword, and she could kill with it. That was enough. Lightfoot, she moved to the big old willow that grew beside the bend in the road, and went to one knee in the grass and mud, within the veil of trailing branches. "You old gods," she prayed, as the singer's voice grew louder, "you tree gods, hide me, and make him go past." Then a horse whickered, and the song broke off suddenly. "He's heard," she knew, "but maybe he's alone, or if he's not, maybe they'll be as scared of us as we are of them."
"Did you hear that?" the man's voice said. "There's something behind that wall, I would say."
"Aye," replied a second voice, deeper. "What do you think it might be, archer?"
"Two, then." Arya bit her lip. She could not see them from where she knelt, on account of the willow, but she could hear.
"A bear."
A third voice, or the first one again.
"A lot of meat on a bear," the deep voice said. "A lot of fat as well, in fall. Good to eat, if it's cooked up right." "Ah, could be a wolf, maybe a lion." "With 4 feet, you think, or two? Makes no matter, does it?" "Not so as I know. Archer, what do you mean to do with all them arrows?"
"Drop a few shafts over the wall. Whatever's hiding back there will come out quick enough. Watch and see."
"What if it's some honest man back there, though, or some poor woman with a little babe at her breast?"
"An honest man would come out and show us his face. Only an outlaw would skulk and hide."
"Aye, that's so. Go on, and loose your shafts, then."
Arya sprang to her feet.
"Don't!"
She showed them her sword. There were three she saw. Only three. Sirio could fight more than three, and she had Hot Pie and Gendry to stand with her. Maybe. But they're boys, and these are men. They were men afoot, travel-stained and mud-specked. She knew the singer by the wood-harp he cradled against his jerkin, as a mother might cradle a babe. A small man, 50 by the look of him, he had a big mouth, a sharp nose, and thinning brown hair. His faded greens were mended here and there with old leather patches, and he wore a brace of throwing knives on his hip, and a woodman's axe slung across his back. The man beside him stood a good foot taller,
and he had the look of a soldier. A longsword and dirk hung from his studded leather belt. Rows of overlapping steel rings were sewn onto his shirt, and his head was covered by a black iron half-helm shaped like a cone. He had bad teeth and a bushy brown beard, but it was his hooded yellow cloak that drew the eye, thick and heavy, stained here with grass and there with blood, frayed along the bottom and patched with deerskin on the right shoulder. The great cloak gave the big man the look of some huge yellow bird. The last of the three was a youth, as skinny as his longbow, if not quite as tall. Red-haired and freckled, he wore a studded brigantine, high boots, fingerless leather gloves, and a quiver on his back. His arrows were fletched with grey goose feathers, and six of them stood in the ground before him like a little fence. The three men looked at her, standing there in the road with her blade in hand. Then the singer idly plucked a string.
"Boy," he said, "put up that sword now, unless you're wanting to be hurt. It's too big for you, lad, and besides, Angai here could put three shafts through you before you could hope to reach us."
"He could not," Arya said, "and I'm a girl."
"So you are," the singer bowed. "My pardons. You go on down the road. Just walk right past here, and you keep on singing so we'll know where you are. Go away, and leave us be, and I won't kill you."
The freckle-faced archer laughed.
"Lem, she won't kill us. Did you hear?"
"I heard," said Lem, the big soldier with a deep voice.
"Child," said the singer, "put up that sword, and we'll take you to a safe place and get some food in that belly. There are wolves in these parts, and lions, and worse things. No place for a little girl to be wandering alone."
"She's not alone." Gendry rode out from behind the cottage wall, and behind him Hot Pie, leading her horse. In his chainmail shirt, with a sword in his hand, Gendry looked almost a man grown and dangerous. Hot Pie looked like Hot Pie.
"Do like she says, and leave us be," warned Gendry.
"Two and three," the singer counted. "And is that all of you? And horses too, lovely horses. Where did you steal them?"
"They're ours." Arya watched them carefully. The singer kept distracting her with his talk. But it was the archer who was the danger.
If he should pull an arrow from the ground... "Will you give us your names, like honest men?" the singer asked the boys.
"I'm Hot Pie," said Hot Pie at once.
"Aye, and good for you," the man smiled. "It's not every day I meet a lad with such a tasty name. And what would your friends be called? Mutton Chop and Squab?"
Gendry scowled down from his saddle.
"Why should I tell you my name? I haven't heard yours."
"Well, as to that, I'm Tom of Seven Streams, but Tom Seven Strings is what they call me, or Thomas Evans. This great lout with the brown teeth is Lem, short for Lemon Cloak. It's yellow, you see, and Lem's a sour sort. And young feller, me lad over there, is Angai, or Archer, as we like to call him."
"Now who are you?"
demanded Lem, in the deep voice that Arya had heard through the branches of the willow. She was not about to give up her true name as easy as that.
"Squab, if you want," she said. "I don't care."
The big man laughed.
"A squab with a sword," he said. "Now there's something you don't often see."
"I'm the bull," said Gendry, taking his lead from Arya. She could not blame him for preferring bull to mutton chop.
Tom Seven Strings strummed his harp.
"Hot Pie, Squab, and the Bull. Escape from Lord Bolton's kitchen, did you?"
"How did you know?" Arya demanded, uneasy.
"You bear a sigil on your chest, little one."
She had forgotten that for an instant. Beneath her cloak, she still wore her fine page's doublet with the flayed man of the Dreadfort sewn on her breast.
"Don't call me little one."
"Why not?" said Lem. "You're little enough."
I'm bigger than I was. I'm not a child. Children didn't kill people, and she had.
I can see that, Squab. You're none of you children, not if you were Balkans.
We never were. Hot Pie never knew when to keep quiet. We were at Hallenhall before he came, that's all.
So you're lion cubs, is that the way of it? Said Tom.
Not that either. We're nobody's men. Whose men are you?
Angai, the archer said. We're king's men.
Arya frowned. Which king?
King Robert, said Lem in his yellow cloak. That old drunk, said Gendry scornfully, is dead. Some boar killed him. Everyone knows that.
Aye, lad, said Tom Sevenstrings, and more's the pity. He plucked a sad chord from his harp. Arya didn't think they were king's men at all. They looked more like outlaws, all tattered and ragged. They didn't even have horses to ride. King's men would have had horses. But Hot Pie piped up eagerly.
We're looking for River Run, he said. How many days' ride is it, do you know?
Arya could have killed him.
You be quiet, or I'll stuff rocks in your big stupid mouth. River Run is a long way upstream, said Tom. A long, hungry way. Might be you'd like a hot meal before you set out. There's an inn not far ahead, kept by some friends of ours. We could share some ale and a bite of bread, instead of fighting one another.
An inn? The thought of hot food made Arya's belly rumble, but she didn't trust this Tom. Not everyone who spoke you friendly was really your friend.
It's near, you say? 2 miles upstream, said Tom. A league at most.
Gendry looked as uncertain as she felt.
What do you mean, friends? He asked wearily.
Friends? Have you forgotten what friends are?
Sharner is the innkeep's name, Tom put in. She has a sharp tongue and a fierce eye, I'll grant you that, but her heart's a good one, and she's fond of little girls.
I'm not a little girl, she said angrily. Who else is there?
You said friends. Sharner's husband, and an orphan boy they took in. They won't harm you. There's ale, if you think you're old enough. Fresh bread, and maybe a bit of meat.
Tom glanced towards the cottage.
And whatever you stole from old Pate's garden besides.
We never stole, said Arya.
Are you old Pate's daughter, then? A sister? A wife? Tell me no lies, Squab. I buried old Pate myself, right there under that willow tree where you were hiding, and you don't have his look.
He drew a sad sound from his harp.
We've buried many a good man this past year, but we've no wish to bury you. I swear it on my harp. Archer, show her.
The archer's hand moved quicker than Arya would have believed. His shaft went hissing past her head, within an inch of her ear, and buried itself in the trunk of the willow behind her. By then the bowman had a second arrow, notched and drawn. She'd thought she understood what Syria meant by quick as a snake and smooth as summer silk, but now she knew she hadn't. The arrow thrummed behind her like a bee.
You missed, she said. More fool, if you think so, said Angai. They go where I send them.
That they do, agreed Lem Lemoncloak.
There were a dozen steps between the archer and the point of her sword.
We have no chance, Arya realized, wishing she had a bow like his and the skill to use it.
Glumly, she lowered her heavy longsword till the point touched the ground.
We'll come see this inn,
she conceded, trying to hide the doubt in her heart behind bold words.
You walk in front, and we'll ride behind, so we can see what you're doing.
Tom Sevenstrings bowed deeply and said,
Before, behind, it makes no matter. Come along, lads, let's show them the way. Angai, best pull up those arrows. We won't be needing them here.
Arya sheathed her sword and crossed the road to where her friends sat on their horses, keeping her distance from the three strangers.
Hot Pie, get those cabbages, she said as she vaulted into her saddle, and the carrots, too.
For once he did not argue. They set off as she had wanted, walking their horses slowly down the rutted road a dozen paces behind the three on foot. But before very long, somehow, they were riding right on top of them. Tom Seven Strings walked slowly and liked to strum his wood harp as he went.
"Do you know any songs?" he asked them. "I'd dearly love someone to sing with, that I would. Lem can't carry a tune, and our longbow lad only knows marcher ballads, every one of them 100 verses long."
"We sing real songs in the marches," Angai said mildly.
"Singing is stupid," said Arya. "Singing makes noise. We heard you a long way off. We could have killed you."
Tom Smile said he did not think so.
"There are worse things than dying with a song on your lips."
"If there were wolves hereabout, we'd know it," Gras Lem. "Or lions. These are our woods."
"You never knew we were there," said Gendry.
"No, lad, you shouldn't be so certain of that," said Tom. "Sometimes a man knows more than he says."
Hot Pie shifted his seat.
"I know the song about the bear," he said. "Some of it, anyhow."
Tom ran his fingers down his strings.
"Then let's hear it, Pie Boy."
He threw back his head and sang.
"A bear there was, a bear, all black and brown and covered with hair."
Hot Pie joined in lustily, even bouncing in his saddle a little on the rhymes. Arya stared at him in astonishment. He had a good voice, and he sang well.
"He never did anything well, except bake," she thought to herself.
A small brook flowed into the Trident a little farther on. As they waded across, their singing flushed a duck from among the reeds. Angai stopped where he stood, unslung his bow, notched an arrow, and brought it down. The bird fell in the shallows not far from the bank. Lem took off his yellow cloak and waded in knee-deep to retrieve it, complaining all the while.
"Do you think Shana might have lemons down in that cellar of hers?" said Angai to Tom, as they watched Lem splash around, cursing. "A Dornish girl once cooked me duck with lemons."
He sounded wistful. Tom and Hot Pie resumed their song on the other side of the brook, with the duck hanging from Lem's belt beneath his yellow cloak. Somehow the singing made the miles seem shorter. It was not very long at all, until the inn appeared before them, rising from the riverbank, where the Trident made a great bend to the north. Arya squinted at it suspiciously as they neared. It did not look like an outlaw's lair, she had to admit. It looked friendly, even homey, with its whitewashed upper story and slate roof and the smoke curling up lazy from its chimney. Stables and other outbuildings surrounded it, and there was an arbour in back, and apple trees, a small garden. The inn even had its own dock, thrusting out into the river. And,
"Gendry," she called, her voice low and urgent, "they have a boat. We could sail the rest of the way up to River Run. It would be faster than riding, I think."
He looked dubious.
"Did you ever sail a boat?"
"You put up the sail," she said, "and the wind pushes it."
"What if the wind is blowing the wrong way?"
"Then there's oars to row."
"Against the current?"
Gendry frowned.
"Wouldn't that be slow? And what if the boat tips over and we fall into the water? It's not our boat anyway, it's the inn's."
"We could take it."
Arya chewed her lip and said nothing. They dismounted in front of stables. There were no other horses to be seen, but Arya noticed fresh manure in many of the stalls. "One of us should watch the horses," she said, wary. Tom overheard her.
"There's no need for that, Squab. Come eat. They'll be safe enough."
"I'll stay," Gentry said, ignoring the singer.
"You can come get me after you've had some food."
Nodding, Arya set off after Hot Pie and Lem. Her sword was still in its sheath across her back, and she kept a hand close to the hilt of the dagger she had stolen from Roose Bolton, in case she didn't like whatever they found within. The painted sign above the door showed a picture of some old king on his knees. Inside was the common room, where a very tall, ugly woman with a knobbly chin, stood with her hands on her hips, glaring.
"Don't you stand there, boy," she snapped, "or are you a girl? Either one, you're blocking my door. Get in or get out. Lem, what did I tell you about my floor? You're all mud."
"We shot a duck."
Lem held it out like a peace banner. The woman snatched it from his hand. "And Guy shot a duck, is that what you're meaning?
Get your boots off. Are you deaf or just stupid?"
She turned away.
"Husband!" she called loudly. "Get up here. The lads are back. Husband!"
Up the cellar steps came a man in a stained apron, grumbling. He was a head shorter than the woman, with a lumpy face and loose, yellowish skin that still showed the marks of some pox.
"Come here, woman. Quit your bellowing. What is it now?"
"Hang this," she said, handing him the duck. Angai shuffled his feet. "We were thinking we might eat it, Shana, with lemons, if you had some."
"Lemons? And where would we get lemons? Does this look like dawn to you, you freckle fool? Why don't you pop back to the lemon trees and pick us a bushel and some nice olives and pomegranates too?"
She shook a finger at him. "Now I suppose I could cook it with Lem's cloak, if you like, but not till it's on for a few days. You'll eat rabbit, or you won't eat. Roast rabbit on a spit would be quickest, if you've got hunger. Or might be you'd like it stewed, with ale and onions." Arya could almost taste the rabbit. "We have no coin, but we bought some carrots and cabbages we could trade you."
"Did you now? And where would they be?"
"Hot pie, give her the cabbages," Arya said, and he did, though he approached the old woman as gingerly as if she were Rorg or Biter or Vargo Hote. The woman gave the vegetables a close inspection, and the boy a closer one.
"Where is this hot pie?"
"Here, me, it's my name, and she's a squab."
"Not under my roof. I give my diners and my dishes different names, so as to tell them apart. Husband!"
Husband had stepped outside, but at her shout he hurried back.
"The duck song! What's it now, woman?"
"Wash these vegetables," she commanded. "The rest of you sit down while I start the rabbits. The boy will bring you drink."
She looked down her long nose at Arya and Hot Pie.
"I'm not in the habit of serving ale to children, but the cider's run out. There's no cows for milk, and the river water tastes of war, with all the dead men drifting downstream. If I served you a cup of soup full of dead flies, would you drink it?"
"Arya would," said Hot Pie. "I mean, squab."
"So would Lem," offered Angai with a sly smile.
"Never you mind about Lem," Shana said. "It's ale for all."
She swept off toward the kitchen. Angai and Tom Sevenstrings took the table near the hearth, while Lem was hanging his big yellow cloak on a peg. Hot Pie plopped down heavily on a bench at the table by the door, and Arya wedged herself in beside him. Tom unslung his harp.
"A lonely inn on a forest road," he sang slowly, picking out a tune to go with the words. "The innkeep's wife was plain as a toad."
"Shut up with that now, or we won't be getting no rabbit," Lem warned him. "You know how she is."
Arya leaned close to Hot Pie. "Can you sail a boat?" she asked. Before he could answer, a thick-set boy of 15 or 16 appeared with tankards of ale. Hot Pie took his reverently in both hands, and when he sipped, he smiled wider than Arya had ever seen him smile.
"Ale," he whispered, "and rabbit."
"Well, here's to his grace,"
Angai the archer called out cheerfully, lifting a toast.
"Seven save the king."
"All 12 of them,"
Lem Lemoncloak muttered. He drank and wiped the foam from his mouth with the back of his hand. Husband came bustling in through the front door with an apron full of washed vegetables.
"There's strange horses in the stable,"
he announced, as if they hadn't known. "Aye," said Tom, setting the woodharp aside, "and better horses than the three you gave away." Husband dropped the vegetables on a table, annoyed.
"I never gave them away. I sold them for a good price, and got a skiff as well. Anyways, you lot were supposed to get them back."
"I knew they were outlaws," Arya thought, listening. Her hand went under the table to touch the hilt of a dagger, and make sure it was still there. "If they try to rob us, they'll be sorry."
"They never came our way," said Lem. "Well, I sent them. You must have been drunk or asleep."
"Us drunk?"
Tom drank a long draught of ale.
"Never!"
"You could have taken them yourself," Lem told husband.
"What, with only the boy here? I told you twice the old woman was up to Lambswold, helping that fern birth her babe, and like as not it was one of you planted the bastard in the poor girl's belly."
He gave Tom a sour look.
"You, I'll wager, with that harp of yours, singing all them sad songs just to get poor Fern out of her small clothes."
"If a song makes a maid want to slip off her clothes and feel the good warm sun kiss her skin, why is that the singer's fault?" asked Tom.
"And 'twas Angai she fancied besides."
"Can I touch your bow?" I heard her ask him. "Ooh, it feels so smooth and hard. Could I give it a little pull, do you think?"
Husband snorted.
"You and Angai makes no matter which. You're as much to blame as me for them horses. They were three, you know. What can one man do against three?"
"Three," said Lem scornfully. "But one a woman and t'other in chains. You said so yourself." Husband made a face.
"A big woman dressed like a man, and the one in chains, I didn't fancy the look in his eyes."
Angai smiled over his ale. "When I don't fancy a man's eyes, I put an arrow through one." Arya remembered the shaft that had brushed by her ear. She wished she knew how to shoot arrows. Husband was not impressed.
"You be quiet when your elders are talking. Drink your ale and mind your tongue, or I'll have the old woman take a spoon to you."
"My elders talk too much, and I don't need you to tell me to drink my ale." He took a big swallow to show that it was so. Arya did the same. After days of drinking from brooks and puddles, and then the muddy trident, the ale tasted as good as the little sips of wine her father used to allow her. A smell was drifting out from the kitchen that made her mouth water, but her thoughts were still of that boat. "Sailing it will be harder than stealing it, if we wait until they're all asleep." The serving boy reappeared with big round loaves of bread. Arya broke off a chunk hungrily and tore into it. It was hard to chew, though, sort of thick and lumpy, and burned on the bottom. Hot Pie made a face as soon as he tasted it.
"That's bad bread," he said. "It's burned, and tough besides." "It's better when there's stew to sop up," said Lem.
"No, it isn't," said Angai, "but you're less like to break your teeth."
"You can eat it or go hungry," said husband. "Do I look like some bloody baker? I'd like to see you make better."
"I could," said Hot Pie. "It's easy. You kneaded the dough too much. That's why it's so hard to chew." He took another sip of ale and began talking lovingly of breads and pies and tarts, all the things he loved. Arya rolled her eyes. Tom sat down across from her. "Squab," he said, "or Harry, or whatever your true name might be, this is for you." He placed a dirty scrap of parchment on the wooden tabletop between them. She looked at it suspiciously. "What is it?" "Three golden dragons. We need to buy those horses." Arya looked at him warily.
"There are horses."
"Meaning you stole them yourselves, is that it?
No shame in that, girl. War makes thieves of many honest folk.
Tom tapped the folded parchment with his finger.
I'm paying you handsome price. More than any horse is worth, if truth be told.
Hot Pie grabbed the parchment and unfolded it.
There's no gold, he complained loudly. It's only writing.
Aye, said Tom, and I'm sorry for that, but after the war, we mean to make that good. You have my word as a king's man.
Arya pushed back from the table and got to her feet.
You're no king's men. You're robbers.
If you'd ever met a true robber, you'd know they do not pay, not even in paper. It's not for us we take your horses, child. It's for the good of the realm, so we can get about more quickly and fight the fights that need fighting, the king's fights. Would you deny the king?
They were all watching her. The archer, Big Lem, husband, with his sallow face and shifty eyes, even Shana, who stood in the door to the kitchen, squinting.
They are going to take our horses no matter what I say, she realized. We'll need to walk to River Run, unless...
We don't want paper. Arya slapped the parchment out of Hot Pie's hand.
You can have our horses for that boat outside, but only if you show us how to work it.
Tom Sevenstrings stared at her for a moment, and then his wide, homely mouth quirked into a rueful grin. He laughed aloud. Angai joined in. And then they were all laughing. Lem, Lemoncloak, Shana, and husband, even the serving boy, who had stepped out from behind the casks with a crossbow under one arm. Arya wanted to scream at them, but instead she started to smile.
Riders!
Gentry's shout was shrill with alarm. The door burst open, and there he was.
Soldiers! He panted. Coming down the river road! A dozen of them!
Hot Pie leapt up, knocking over his tankard, but Tom and the others were unperturbed.
There's no cause for spilling good ale on my floor, said Shana. Sit back down and calm yourself, boy. There's Rabbit coming. You too, girl. Whatever harm's been done you, it's over and it's done, and you're with King's men now. We'll keep you safe as best we can.
Arya's only answer was to reach over her shoulder for her sword, but before she had it halfway drawn, Lem grabbed her wrist.
We'll have no more of that now.
He twisted her arm until her hand opened. His fingers were hard with callous and fearsomely strong.
Again, Arya thought, it's happening again, like it happened in the village with Chizik and Raff and the man that rides.
They were going to steal her sword and turn her back into a mouse. A free hand closed around her tankard, and she swung it at Lem's face. The ale slushed over the rim and splashed into his eyes, and she heard his nose break and saw the spurt of blood. When he roared, his hands went to his face, and she was free.
Run!
She screamed, bolting. But Lem was on her again at once, with his long legs that made one of his steps equal to three of hers. She twisted and kicked, but he yanked her off her feet effortlessly and held her dangling while the blood ran down his face.
"Stop it, you little fool!" he shouted, shaking her back and forth. "Stop it now!"
Gendry moved to help her, until Tom Sevenstrings stepped in front of them with a dagger. By then, it was too late to flee. She could hear horses outside and the sound of men's voices. A moment later, a man came swaggering through the open door, a Tyroshi even bigger than Lem, with a great thick beard, bright green at the ends, but growing out grey. Behind came a pair of crossbowmen, helping a wounded man between them, and then others. A more ragged band Arya had never seen. But there was nothing ragged about the swords, axes, and bows they carried. One or two gave her curious glances as they entered, but no one said a word. A one-eyed man in a rusty pot-helm sniffed the air and grinned, while an archer with a head of stiff yellow hair was shouting for ale. After them came a spearman in a lion-crested helm, an older man with a limp, a brave Vossi's sellsword, a...
Harwin,
Arya whispered.
It was.
Under the beard and the tangled hair was the face of Hullan's son, who used to lead her pony around the yard, ride at Quinton, with John and Rob, and drink too much on feast days. He was thinner, harder somehow, and at Winterfell he'd never worn a beard, but it was him, her father's man. Harwin! Squirming, she threw herself forward, trying to wrench free of Lem's iron grip. "It's me!" she shouted. "Harwin, it's me! Don't you know me? Don't you?" The tears came, and she found herself weeping like a babe, just like some stupid little girl. "Harwin, it's me!" Harwin's eyes went from her face to the flayed man on her doublet. "How do you know me?" he said, frowning suspiciously. "The flayed man? Who are you? Some serving boy to Lord Leech?" For a moment she did not know how to answer. She'd had so many names. Had she only dreamed Arya Stark? "I'm a girl," she sniffed. "I was Lord Bolton's cupbearer, but he was going to leave me for the goat, so I ran off with Gendry and Hot Pie. You have to know me. You used to lead my pony when I was little." His eyes went wide.
"Gods be good," he said in a choked voice. "Arya underfoot?
Lem, let go of her. She broke my nose." Lem dumped her unceremoniously to the floor.
"Who in Seven Hells is she supposed to be?"
"The Hand's daughter." Harwin went to one knee before her. "Arya Stark, of Winterfell." Catelyn.
Rob.
She knew the moment she heard the kennels erupt. Her son had returned to Riverrun and Grey Wind with him. Only the scent of the great grey direwolf could send the hounds into such a frenzy of baying and barking.
"He will come to me," she knew.
Edmure had not returned after his first visit, preferring to spend his days with Mark Piper and Patrick Mallister, listening to Ryman the Rhymer's verses about the battle at the Stone Mill. "Rob is not Edmure, though. Rob will see me." It had been raining for days now, a cold grey downpour that well suited Catelyn's mood. Her father was growing weaker and more delirious with every passing day, waking only to mutter, "Tansy," and beg forgiveness. Edmure shunned her, and Sir Desmond Grail still denied her freedom of the castle, however unhappy it seemed to make him. Only the return of Sir Robin Rygar and his men, foot-weary and drenched to the bone, served to lighten her spirits. They had walked back, it seemed. Somehow the Kingslayer had contrived to sink their galley and escape, Maester Wyman confided. Catelyn asked if she might speak with Sir Robin to learn more of what had happened, but that was refused her. Something else was wrong as well. On the day her brother returned, a few hours after their argument, she had heard angry voices from the yard below. When she climbed to the roof to see, there were knots of men gathered across the castle beside the main gate. Horses were being led from the stable, saddled and bridled, and there was shouting, though Catelyn was too far away to make out the words. One of Rob's white banners lay on the ground, and one of the knights turned his horse and trampled over the direwolf as he spurred toward the gate. Several others did the same.
"Those are men who fought with Edmure on the fords," she thought. "What could have made them so angry? Has my brother slighted them somehow? Given them some insult?"
She thought she recognized Sir Perwin Frey, who had travelled with her to Bitterbridge and Storm's End and back, and his bastard half-brother, Martin Rivers, as well, but from this vantage it was hard to be certain. Close to 40 men poured out through the castle gates, to what end she did not know. They did not come back. Nor would Maester Wyman tell her who they had been, where they had gone, or what had made them so angry.
"I'm here to say to your father, and only that, my lady," he said. "Your brother will soon be Lord of Riverrun.
what he wishes you to know, he must tell you.
But now Rob was returned from the West, returned in triumph. He will forgive me, Catelyn told herself. He must forgive me. He is my own son, and Arya and Sansa are as much his blood as mine. He will free me from these rooms, and then I will know what has happened. By the time Sir Desmond came for her, she had bathed and dressed and combed out her auburn hair.
King Rob has returned from the West, my lady, the knight said, and commands that you attend him in the great hall.
It was the moment she had dreamed of and dreaded. Have I lost two sons, or three? She would know soon enough. The hall was crowded when they entered. Every eye was on the dais, but Catelyn knew their backs. Lady Mormont's patched ringmail, the great John and his son looming over every other head in the hall. Lord Jason Mallister, white-haired with his winged helm in the crook of his arm. Titus Blackwood in his magnificent raven-feather cloak. Half of them will want to hang me now. The other half may only turn their eyes away. She had an uneasy feeling that someone was missing, too. Rob stood on the dais. He is a boy no longer, she realized with a pang. He's 16 now, a man grown. Just look at him. War had melted all the softness from his face and left him hard and lean. He had shaved his beard away, but his auburn hair fell uncut to his shoulders. The recent rains had rusted his mail and left brown stains on the white of his cloak and surcoat. Perhaps the stains were blood. On his head was a sword crown. They had fashioned him of bronze and iron. He bears it more comfortably now. He bears it like a king. Edmure stood below the crowded dais, head bowed modestly as Rob praised his victory. Fell at the stone mill. Shall never be forgotten. Small wonder Lord Tywin ran off to fight Stannis. He'd had his fill of Northmen and Rivermen both. That brought laughter and approving shouts, but Rob raised a hand for quiet. Make no mistake, though, the Lannisters will march again, and there will be other battles to win before the kingdom is secure. The great John roared out, King in the North! And thrust a mailed fist into the air. The river lords answered with a shout of, King of the Trident! The hall grew thunderous with pounding fists and stamping feet. Only a few noted Catelyn and Sir Desmond amidst the tumult, but they elbowed their fellows, and slowly a hush grew around her. She held her head high and ignored the eyes. Let them think what they will. It is Rob's judgment that matters. The sight of Sir Brynden Tully's craggy face on the dais gave her comfort. A boy she did not know seemed to be acting as Rob's squire. Behind him stood a young knight in a sand-coloured surcoat blazoned with seashells, and an older one who wore three black pepper pots on a saffron bend across a field of green and silver stripes. Between them were a handsome older lady and a pretty maid who looked to be her daughter. There was another girl as well, near Sansa's age. The seashells were the sigil of some lesser house, Catelyn knew. The older man's she did not recognize. Prisoners? Why would Rob bring captives onto the dais? Authorized Wayne banged his staff on the floor as Sir Desmond escorted her forward. If Rob looks at me as Edmure did, I do not know what I will do. But it seemed to her that it was not anger she saw in her son's eyes, but something else. Apprehension, perhaps. No, that made no sense. What should he fear? He was the young wolf, king of the Trident and the North. Her uncle was the first to greet her. As black a fish as ever, Sir Brynden had no care for what the others might think. He leapt off the dais and pulled Catelyn into his arms. When he said, It's good to see you home, Cat, she had to struggle to keep her composure. And you, she whispered. Mother. Catelyn looked up at her tall, kingly son. Your Grace, I have prayed for your safe return. I had heard you were wounded. I took an arrow through the arm while storming the crag, he said. It healed well, though. I had the best of care. The gods are good, then. Catelyn took a deep breath. Say it. It cannot be avoided. They will have told you what I did. Did they tell you my reasons? For the girls? I had 5 children. Now I have 3.
Aye, my lady.
Lord Rickard Carstark pushed past the Great John, like some grim spectre, with his black mail and long, ragged grey beard, his narrow face pinched and cold.
And I have 1 son, who once had 3. You have robbed me of my vengeance.
Catelyn faced him calmly. Lord Rickard, the Kingslayer's dying would not have bought life for your children. His living may buy life for mine. The Lord was unappeased.
Jaime Lannister has played you for a fool. You bought a bag of empty words, no more. My Torren and my Eddard deserved better of you.
Leave off, Carstark,
grumbled the Great John, crossing his huge arms against his chest.
It was a mother's folly. Women are made that way.
A mother's folly?
Lord Carstark rounded on Lord Umber.
I name it treason. Enough!
For just an instant, Rob sounded more like Brandon than his father. No man calls my Lady Winterfell a traitor in my hearing, Lord Rickard. When he turned to Catelyn, his voice softened.
If I could wish the Kingslayer back in chains, I would. You freed him without my knowledge or consent. But what you did, I know you did for love, for Arya and Sansa, and out of grief for Bran and Rickon. Love's not always wise, I've learned. It can lead us to great folly. But we follow our hearts, wherever they take us. Don't we, Mother? Is that what I did? If my heart led me into folly, I would gladly make whatever amends I can to Lord Carstark and yourself. Lord Rickard's face was implacable.
Will your amends warm Torren and Eddard in their cold graves, where the Kingslayer laid them?
He shouldered past the Great John and Mage Mormont and left the hall. Rob made no move to detain him. Forgive him, Mother. If you will forgive me, I have. I know what it is to love so greatly, you can think of nothing else. Catelyn bowed her head. Thank you. I have not lost this child, at least. We must talk, Rob went on. You and my uncles, of this and other things. Stuart, call an end. Authorized Wayne slammed his staff on the floor and shouted the dismissal, and river lords and northerners alike moved toward the doors. It was only then that Catelyn realized what was amiss. The wolf. The wolf is not here. Where is Grey Wind? She knew the dire wolf had returned with Rob. She had heard the dogs, but he was not in the hall, not at his son's side where he belonged. Before she could think to question Rob, however, she found herself surrounded by a circle of well-wishers. Lady Mormont took her hand and said,
My lady, if Cersei Lannister held 2 of my daughters, I would have done the same.
The Great John, no respecter of proprieties, lifted her off her feet and squeezed her arms with his huge hairy hands.
Your wolf pup maul the Kingslayer once. He'll do it again, if need be.
Gorbart Glover and Lord Jason Mallister were cooler, and Jonas Bracken almost icy, but their words were courteous enough. Her brother was the last to approach her.
I pray for your girls as well, Cat. I hope you do not doubt that.
Of course not. She kissed him. I love you for it. When all the words were done, the great hall of Riverrun was empty, save for Rob, the 3 Tullys, and the 6 strangers Catelyn could not place. She eyed them curiously. My lady, sirs, are you new to my son's cause?
"'New,' said the younger knight, him of the seashells, "'but fierce in our courage and firm in our loyalties, "'as I hope to prove to you, my lady.' "'Rob looked uncomfortable. "'Mother,' he said, "'may I present the Lady Sybil, "'the wife of Lord Gawain Westling of the Crag?' "'The older woman came forward with solemn mien. "'Her husband was one of those we took captive in the Whispering Wood.'
"'Westling, yes.' Catelyn thought. Their banner is six seashells, white on sand. A minor house sworn to the Lannisters.
Rob beckoned the other strangers forward, each in turn. Sir Rolf Spicer, Lady Sybil's brother. He was castellan at the crag when we took it. The Pepperpot Knight inclined his head, a square-built man with a broken nose and a close-cropped grey beard. He looked doughty enough. "'The children of Lord Gawain and Lady Sybil. "'Sir Reynard Westerling.' "'The seashell knight smiled beneath a bushy moustache. "'Young, lean, rough-hewn, he had good teeth and a thick mop of chestnut hair. "'Elenia?' "'The little girl did a quick curtsy. "'Rolam Westerling, my squire.' "'The boy started to kneel, saw no one else was kneeling, and bowed instead.' "'The honour is mine,' Catelyn said.
"'Can Rob have won the Crag's allegiance?'
"'If so, it was no wonder the Westlings were with him. "'Custly Rock did not suffer such betrayals gently. "'Not since Tywin Lannister had been old enough to go to war. "'The maid came forward last, and very shy. "'Rob took her hand. "'Mother,' he said, "'I have the great honour to present you the Lady Jane Westerling.' Lord Gawain's elder daughter and my lady wife. The first thought that flew across Catelyn's mind was, No, that cannot be, you're only a child. The second was, And besides, you have pledged another. The third was, Mother, have mercy, Rob, what have you done? Only then came her belated remembrance. Follies done for love? He has bagged me neat as a hare in the snare. I seem to have already forgiven him. Mixed with her annoyance was a rueful admiration. The scene had been staged with a cunning worthy of a master mummer, or a king. Catelyn saw no choice but to take Jane Westling's hands. "'I have a new daughter,' she said, more stiffly than she'd intended. She kissed the terrified girl on both cheeks. "'Be welcome to our hall and hearth.'
"'Thank you, my lady. "'I shall be a good and true wife to Rob, I swear, "'and as wise a queen as I can.'
"'Queen? Yes, this pretty little girl is a queen. "'I must remember that.'
"'She was pretty, undeniably, "'with her chestnut curls and heart-shaped face and that shy smile. "'Slender, but with good hips,' Catelyn noted. She should have no trouble bearing children, at least. Lady Sybil took a hand before any more was said. "'We are honoured to be joined to House Stark, my lady, but we are also very wary. We have come a long way in a short time. Perhaps we might retire to our chambers, so you may visit with your son?' "'That would be best,' Rob kissed his Jane. The steward will find you suitable accommodations.
I'll take you to him,
Sir Edmure Tully volunteered.
You are most kind, said Lady Sybil.
Must I go too?
Asked the boy Rolam.
I'm your squire.
Rob laughed. But I'm not in need of squiring just now.
Oh. His Grace has gotten along for 16 years without you, Rolam. "'Said Sir Reynold of the Seashells. "'He will survive a few hours more, I think.'
"'Taking his little brother firmly by the hand, "'he walked him from the hall. "'Your wife is lovely,' Catelyn said, "'when they were out of earshot. "'And the Westerlings seem worthy, "'though Lord Gawain is Tywin Lannister's sworn man, is he not?' "'Yes. "'Jason Malister captured him in the Whispering Wood "'and has been holding him at sea guard for ransom.' "'Of course I'll free him now,
though he may not wish to join me. We wed without his consent, I fear, and this marriage puts him in dire peril. The crag is not strong. For love of me, Jane may lose all. And you, she said softly, have lost the phrase. His wince told all. She understood the angry voices now, why Perwin Frey and Martin Rivers had left in such haste, trampling Rob's banner into the ground as they went. "Dare I ask how many swords come with your bride, Rob?"
50, a dozen knights. His voice was glum, as well it might be.
When the marriage contract had been made at the Twins, old Lord Walder Frey had sent Rob off with 1,000 mounted knights and near 3,000 foot. Jane is bright as well as beautiful, and kind as well. She has a gentle heart.
It is swords you need, not gentle hearts. How could you do this, Rob? How could you be so heedless, so stupid? How could you be so very young?
Reproaches would not serve here, however. All she said was, "Tell me how this came to be."
"I took her castle, and she took my heart," Rob smiled. "The crag was weakly garrisoned, so we took it by storm one night. Black Walder and the Small John led scaling parties over the walls, while I broke through the main gate with a ram. I took an arrow in the arm just before Sir Rolf yielded us the castle. It seemed nothing at first, but it festered. Jane had me taken to her own bed, and she nursed me until the fever passed. And she was with me when the great John brought me the news of Winterfell, Bran, and Rickon." He seemed to have trouble saying his brothers' names. "That night she comforted me, Mother." Catelyn did not need to be told what sort of comfort Jane Westling had offered her son. "And you wed her the next day?" He looked in her eyes, proud and miserable all at once. "It was the only honourable thing to do. She's gentle and sweet, Mother. She will make me a good wife. Perhaps that will not appease Lord Frey." "I know," her son said, stricken. "I've made a botch of everything but the battles, haven't I? I thought the battles would be the hard part, but if I had listened to you and kept Theon as my hostage, I still rule the North, and Bran and Rickon would be alive and safe in Winterfell." "Perhaps, or not. Lord Balin might still have chanced war. The last time he reached for a crown, it cost him 2 sons. He might have thought it a bargain to lose only one this time." She touched his arm. "What happened with the phrase, after you wed?" Rob shook his head. "With Sir Stevron, I might have been able to make amends, but Sir Ryman is dull-witted as a stone. And Black Walder, that one was not named for the colour of his beard, I promise you. He went so far as to say that his sisters would not be loath to wed a widower. I would have killed him for that, if Jane had not begged me to be merciful. You have done House Frey a grievous insult, Rob."
"I never meant to. Sir Stevron died for me, and Oliver was as loyal a squire as any king could want. He asked to stay with me, but Sir Ryman took him with the rest, all their strength. The great John urged me to attack them."
"Fighting your own in the midst of your enemies," she said, "it would have been the end of you."
"Yes, I thought perhaps we could arrange other matches for Lord Walder's daughters. Sir Wendell Manderley has offered to take one, and the great John tells me his uncles wish to wed again. If Lord Walder will be reasonable—"
"He is not reasonable," said Catelyn. "He is proud and prickly to a fault, you know that. He wanted to be grandfather to a king. You will not appease him with the offer of 2 hoary old brigands and the second son of the fattest man in the 7 kingdoms. Not only have you broken your oath, but you've slighted the honour of the Twins by choosing a bride from a lesser house."
Rob bristled at that. "The Westerlings are better blood than the Freys. They're an ancient line, descended from the first men. The kings of the rock sometimes wed Westlings before the conquest,
and there was another Jane Westling who was queen to King Maegor 300 years ago. All of which will only